especially in the West, but even nowadays in India they kill cows. But especially in the West, it is one of the biggest businesses in the world. The meat industry is one of the absolute biggest industries in the world. And they kill millions and billions of cows every year. And for that, we are being punished by nature. Now, most people in modern society, they are not deliberately being evil or merciless. But the way people are being trained in the modern society, they grow up like that, without any mercy, without any consideration of other living entities. Because modern people actually think that nature is here for them to enjoy and for them to exploit, and all the other living entities, they're less important than the human beings. But there's no logical reason to assume that, for instance, I am more important than an ant. Who says that my satisfaction, my family life, my this and my that is more important than what the ant is doing on the lawn? He also has a family, he also has a job, and he also has stuff to do. So why do we say that the human being is more important? Of course, from a dharmic point of view, the human form of life is very rare, is very rarely attained, and is very important because it is in the human form of life that the soul can understand Krishna. But apart from that, apart from understanding God and the meaning of life, and understanding what we have to do in this life, what is the way to act, apart from that, the human being is not more important than a cow, or an ass, or a horse, or a fly, or an ant. Especially from an atheistic point of view, they say that first there was this little amoeba, then the amoeba gradually grew legs and learned to talk, and wrote down the Bhagavatam. And see, from that point of view, the human being is just an animal. They actually say that. They become very offended when Prabhupada many places say that you are an animal, you're no better than an animal. They will become very offended. But according to their own philosophy, they have reduced the human being to animals. Because what do animals do? They eat, sleep, mate, and spend. And if the human beings don't do anything else, well, it's just like animals. There's no difference. If we only live for these to gratify our base bodily urges, there's no difference between us and animals. And in the modern society, people are actually being trained up to be like animals. Now, there are many noble and good people in society. There are very many movements, and they want to save this and save that. Save the whale, save the seals, save the forest, save the environment, save the mountains, save the planet. And they're very concerned about global warming and animal species who are going extinct. They're very concerned about all these things. But who wants to save the cow? Nobody except the Hare Krishna movement actually is actually save the cow movement. We are the Krishna consciousness movement, but part of that movement is to respect and honor the cow. Why? Because the cow is our mother. And to kill the cow, there's no difference. It's exactly as horrible as killing your own mother. So this is the sad state of the modern society, that we have become a society of mother killers. We even keep them in slaughterhouses and kill them. It's not that we just keep a cow and then we go out and slaughter her when she's old or when we are hungry. But we keep big slaughterhouses in which they are dragged in by the thousands every day lined up on an assembly line and killed. Can you just imagine how insane that is to kill other living entities on an assembly line? And they call this kids nowadays, they're brought up to believe that the modern society, the modern culture, is the most advanced culture in terms of human progress and knowledge. They even indoctrinate the children into thinking that we never had it better, and we never knew more, and we were never so advanced as we are today. But Prabhupada has very mercifully come to tell us the truth. And the truth is that the modern society is just an animal society, a low-class, primitive society with no real knowledge and no consideration for other living entities. And who told us that? Prabhupada is the only one who told us that. He's the only one who came to the West and told us the truth. Many people in India, they know, because it's from India the original culture came, and so they know. But Prabhupada was the only one to broadcast the Vedic message, the message of Gauranga Mahaprabhu, to broadcast it all over the world with the help of his dear followers and disciples. Nobody else but Prabhupada wants to save the cow. Nobody else but Prabhupada told us even that it is sinful to kill cows or to kill animals at all. Prabhupada doesn't even say cows here. He says animals. Any form of animal slaughter is cruel, especially the cow. But all animals should be treated with respect. And as Vaishnavas, we are being trained up to respect even the fly and the ant. I remember before I became a devotee, if a fly came and irritated me, I would have no compulsion, slam, kill it on the spot. Or some ant coming and invading my space, slam. No compulsion, didn't even think it was wrong. But as Vaishnavas, we're being trained to have consideration for these other living entities, and now we wouldn't even kill a fly, or a cockroach, or a spider. If I see a cockroach or a spider in my house, I take a cup and put over it and slide a paper and throw it out the window. We would never kill other living entities. I have to admit, I kill mosquitoes. Sorry. But actually, Prabhupada said that you can kill somebody who attacks you with evil intent. That's one of the living entities you can actually kill. So mosquitoes, they attack you and suck your blood. So, of course, even Prabhupada would not even kill a mosquito. One time a mosquito was sitting and biting him, and his disciple was saying, "Oh, Prabhupada," and trying to get the mosquito away, and actually slapped it away. I think it was even Harisawi Prabhu who was in that pastime. And Prabhupada said, no, leave it alone. He's just taking his share. Because it's the nature, a mosquito doesn't think, "Now I'm really going to go and hassle this person and suck his blood." He thinks, "I'm just going to go and eat." That's just his nature. So as Vaishnavas, we are being trained up to see the real nature of all living entities and the real nature of the human being. And we are also learning to see who is God and God's friends and God's girlfriends and wives and everything. This information is not available in any other religion in the world. The Vaishnava religion is the only religion who can tell us who God is, what he looks like, where he lives, what he does, who his friends are, and all these things. If you ask in any other religion who is God, they can say, "Well, he's the creator and he's the maintainer of everything." They don't even recognize that he's also the destroyer of everything. Oh, this is Satan. He destroys. But nothing goes on in this world without the sanction of Krishna. So So Krishna is the ultimate force of everything, Janma Jasyata. And we are so lucky that Prabhupada has come and told us this. He's given us a chance to actually go back to Godhead. He's forcibly dragging us back to Godhead. Even we don't want. If we just stay in this Krishna consciousness movement, and thus our service chain our rounds and try to the best of our abilities to serve the Vaishnavas and follow the principles, Prabhupada is going to drag us back to Godhead. Such a wonderful movement. Sometimes we become caught up in this fault and that fault and many mistakes. Surely there are many mistakes. As it says in the Bhagavad Gita, there is no endeavor, there is no action or endeavor without a mistake. So nobody in the material world is perfect except the acharyas. And our spiritual masters. But everything that we try to do, even to serve Krishna, there will be some mistake. But Krishna doesn't see these mistakes. He sees the heart, he sees our motivation, our sincerity. That's what Krishna sees, because Krishna is so liberal, he doesn't even hold it against us that we do this and that wrong. He will only see what we did for him to please him. Like in this prayer, in this Upanishad, and one of the last prayers, the devotee prays, "Oh God, please remember everything I did for you at the point of death." When we, the mind is in turmoil, we have to actually turn it towards Krishna and pray to Krishna, "Please remember what we did for you. Don't see my faults." Because if that was the case, we would never go anywhere. We are in the material body, we just have to look in the mirror. And we will see a fault right there. So this body is fraught with faults. But the soul sitting inside this body, the soul is perfect. The soul is Satchitananda. So it is only because of identifying with this body that we become implicated in faults. If we can actually understand, like Krishna says, if you know you are the soul and not the body, even if you kill people in this world, you will not be a killer. So we don't preach that to people. Usually when I quote the Bhagavad Gita, I preach on the internet. I quote every time I quote a verse of the Bhagavad Gita, but I never quote that verse. Because the materialists, they won't understand. They will always say, "Oh, look at that, Krishna gives you license to kill." No, Krishna doesn't do that. The whole Bhagavad Gita is about how to become peaceful and dharmic and pious. It's not about how to kill. So we are in this fortunate position that we are in the Krishna consciousness movement, and that we actually know the truth. We are the only people in the world who actually know the truth, the meaning of life, who know who God is. And that obligates us to go out and tell other people. It's not enough to just be satisfied, "Yes, I know the truth. Let me just sit and chant and go back to God." And no, we actually have Prabhupada, he wanted to save the world. Prabhupada had such a vision. He wanted to save the whole world. And that's what we have to do. Even we sit here, Mayapur. Mayapur is the center of the universe, and now this temple is shooting up. And from this, from Mayapur will be spread the glories of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu all over the world. This is predicted by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, by Nityananda Prabhu, by the Acharyas, that the glories of Gauranga will go out to the whole world from this. Of course, it is already happening now. There are devotees all over the planet. They are going on Harinam, they are distributing Prabhupada's books, they are distributing prasadam. And in this way, the atmosphere of the whole planet is being purified. If there was no devotees on the planet spreading the glories of Krishna, imagine it was just up to the general karma of people. There's no way this this culture would have been smashed to smithereens long time ago, because it is so sinful, as I said, first and foremost, for its cow killing. Just for that, it wouldn't last for many years. But because devotees are preaching and going out and trying to spread the glories of Krishna, that's actually what holds the culture together. That's why it has not already been washed away. So the material world is only good for one thing, and that is for preaching Krishna consciousness. So today is the disappearance day of Sri Raghunandan Thakur, and it is also the disappearance of Sri Vansidas Babaji Maharaj. So I have printed this out from Pambo. Tushti Mohan, he's so kind that he sends out all these texts about the great personalities in our line, so that we can read these. So I'm going to read a little bit that I printed out first about Sri Raghunandan Thakur, and then about Bhaktisiddhas Babaji Maharaj. Are there any comments or questions, though, regarding the verse and the points that Prabhupada makes in the verse? Yes, Prabhu?
You seem to be indicating that the Krishna consciousness movement is preventing war from happening. But in the purport, it sounded like because of all the animal killing that's going on, there will be a coming war. And Prabhupada did speak to this to some devotees on a morning walk.
Yes.
You could address that a little bit.
Yes, thank you for making that point. It is a fact that Prabhupada mentions here that the wars in the world, they are the direct result of animal slaughter. We slaughter the animals, and then we go out and we are being slaughtered in wars. Now, I used to learn in school that there's been peace on the planet since World War II, and there might not have been any international war since then, but national wars and regional conflicts are escalating like anything. And actually, I read on the net that there's never been so much war, regional war, national wars, different factions within the same countries fighting as there is today. So to say that we have lived in peace since the Second World War is simply just meaningless, because there's no peace and wars are escalating. But my point to say that the presence of devotees on the planet, because according to the karma, this culture, as far as I can see, it's a slaughterhouse culture, and it's made it a business to kill cows, which in the Vedas it is mentioned that the most sinful activity you can do is to kill a cow. It's the most sinful activity you can do. And this is going on like completely normal in the modern society, so karmically, it shouldn't even be on the planet. We should just, and it's a fact, nature is hammering on the modern cultures with all kinds of catastrophes and calamities and wars. Like America, they are in war in Iraq, in Afghanistan, and the young people of this country, they have to go into war, and many, many people are being slaughtered in wars. What to speak in Africa, there's so many regional wars in the Middle East, and in Europe, there are wars and conflict all over the place, and people are being shot and killed. And they say that they try to have all kinds political talks and peace seminars and this and that. But Prabhupada says that all these conflicts, they are a direct result of animal slaughter. But people don't know this. Like I said, they want to save the whale or save the seal. But who wants to save the sheep or the pigs or the cows who every day are going to the slaughterhouse to get slaughtered? Nobody wants to save them. And Prabhupada says here very clearly that all these wars that are going on in the planet is a direct result of this animal slaughter. But my idea is that because since Mahaprabhu descended, this golden age started actually. The golden age of Mahaprabhu, and which has been predicted to last 10,000 years. So there's a new age beginning, and the age of Krishna consciousness cannot take root in this present sinful culture. Like in India, it's not so bad. You can go out and speak to people about Krishna and they will actually listen respectfully. And even a complete rascal materialist, an Indian, he will pay his respects, even he's an atheist, just automatically by his culture and by his upbringing, he passes a deity or sees a deity or the temple, he'll pay his respects. But in the West, people just think it's completely ridiculous, all this God stuff. And they completely reject as a general rule. There may be many religions and Christians and Muslims, but they actually don't have power to make people God conscious. So what was I saying? The point is that karmically speaking, the culture should already have been destroyed. But because the golden age is beginning, and so it will be destroyed, but I think it will be a gradual less tumultuous process than if it was just up to the pure karma people. Because devotees, they were preaching and starting the new age, it will be less violent. The transition between this present sinful culture and the new age of Mahaprabhu will be less violent and chaotic because there are devotees on the planet. But the modern culture is right now is in the process of being dismantled by nature, and it is as it should be, because the new age cannot take root in this sinful culture. Like I said, you can't even, people think Krishna consciousness and devotees are basically ridiculous people who don't do any who don't produce anything, who don't contribute to production of modern society. They don't regard preaching God consciousness as a legitimate activity. So this culture has to be finished, and then the new age can really start. And we are right in the middle of that. We're sitting in the middle of that process, so sometimes we can't see it, like they say, you can't see the forest for trees. But we are actually the first, the pioneers who are starting the new age. Not that we should be puffed up about it, because all credit goes to Prabhupada and his sincere followers. But we're so lucky to have become connected to this movement.
Okay, my question is, when King Puranjana was at home with his wife, and now he's in the forest hunting animals, Puranjana?
Yeah.
When he was at home, and now in the forest, killing animals, which one of his activities is most sinful?
It's a funny thing, because in the previous verses we have heard how Puranjana, he was so attached to his wife, he couldn't leave her side for a minute, and he would follow her around like a dog, basically, on a leash. But what can get him out of the house? To go out to the forest and kill animals. So that is more sinful than staying at home with his wife and being attached. definitely more sinful to go out and kill animals in the forest. Now, in the old days, the kshatriyas, they would go out and they would learn and practice the bow and arrow and learn how to kill. But they wouldn't kill little timid like they do nowadays. They go out in the forest with shotguns and they shoot rabbits and foxes and animals that are harmless, deer. I heard Harikesh used to tell us that the deer in the forest in the Vedic times, they were not these little timid creatures that we have nowadays. They were ferocious creatures with fangs that would kill people, the deer. So the kshatriya, because the kshatriya, he's the one who protects, and many people were living in the forest, so he went to the forest not only to practice how to kill, but also to protect the sages and the sannyasis that were living in the forest. So, but nowadays they do it like a sport, like Upurantana, and that's most simple. You just do it without any consideration, without any courage. I mean, anyone can stand, you know, 500 yards away and shoot someone with a rifle. What's the honor in that? At least if they had bows and arrows, it would be a little more honorable and a little more, requiring a little more skill. But nowadays they did just, you know, with a high-powered rifle, just plug away at creatures like you. They don't, can't even see you or sense you. They're fine, they're dead, because you feel the urge to kill someone. And they call it a sport with grief. So Prabhupada describes Sri Puranjana as very, very sinful and demonic, because he goes to the forest to kill. Not as a kshatriya to protect the sages, or to, but simply just because he thinks it's a lot of fun.
You talk about protecting the animals, not only the cow, all the animals. We've seen the story of Bharat Maharaj, because of a deer, he was trying to protect a deer, became a deer in his next life. So when a devotee or a human being protects any animal, sometimes it's an affection for the animal. So what happens if he becomes like Bharat Maharaj in the next life?
Yeah, we are being warned to not become attached. There's a difference between being attached and being compassionate. Being compassionate towards other living entities doesn't mean, just because we don't want to kill a dog or a cat, doesn't mean that we take the dog into our house and park it. My mother has a dog and she actually kisses it right on the snout and lets it lick her face. It's so disgusting. And she thinks it's love. And it is a kind of weird love to love a dog, but that's pure attachment, and that is degrading. You simply just don't let a dog lick you in the face. That's attachment, but that doesn't mean that you cannot regard it as with respect. And respect, when we say respect other living entities, it means that we respect their right to eat, sleep, mate, and defend, their right to a life. It doesn't mean that we become attached to them. So that we learn as devotees to not become attached. And we shouldn't even be attached to our wife and children, what to speak of cats and dogs and chickens and rabbits. So this attachment in the heart is a very strong, strong bond. And it's a natural to be attached to our loved ones, to our children, to our family, and all these things. So as devotees, we learn to transfer that attachment to Krishna, because that is what we should be attached to. Krishna, he is actually the only child, the only lover, the only husband. He's the one. Just as passionately as we would lust for a woman or a person of the opposite sex, just as intensely passionate, we should be about Krishna. And we will be, if we follow this process, just like the gopis, see how attached they are. They can't live even a second and this is where we are going, this is where we have to go, this is where we want to go, to become attached to Krishna like that, because Krishna is the only one who's never going to leave you. Every other attachment is going to end in suffering. You place your attachment on your dog or your wife or your children, they always end up leaving you. And then this so-called love is going to end in misery, in lamentation. So the only person who will never leave you, who will always be there for you, and who will always protect you, is Krishna and Krishna's devotees. So that's what we are working at, to become attached. Alright, so I'll read this about Raghunandan Thakur and Vasudev Babaji, because it's disappeared today, and it is very helpful for our spiritual advancement to remember these great personalities in our life, and to remember them and to glorify them. So Sri Raghunandan Thakur, he was the son of Mukunda Das. Sri Mukunda Das, Madhava Das, and Sri Narahari Sakar, they were three brothers who lived in the village of Sri Kanda. And Raghunandan was the son of Sri Mukunda Das. Now there's this famous pastime, you probably have heard it 1,000 times. So bear with me, I'm going to tell it to you yet, and yet one more time. In the house of Sri Mukunda Das, who lives at Sri Kanda, Lord Sri Gopinath is served with great devotion. One day Mukunda was called out to do some work, and then he instructed his son Raghunandan to worship the deity and ask him to serve the Lord Gopinath when he was away. He asked him to take over the service to the deity. He explained to him that this deity has been in our family for many generations, and thus he has been worshipped by my father and his father and his father and so on for many, many years. Just as your mother feeds you and I every day, so also he has to be fed every day. Having explained this to Raghunandan, that this is a very big responsibility and he should be very careful to give his full attention to the service, Mukunda went out. Meanwhile, Raghunandan, having been instructed by his father, collected the items for offering to Sri Gopinathji and entered into the deity room. Raghunandan was at that time barely 5 years old, and therefore when he saw that Gopinath hadn't eaten the offering after he had imitated how his father offered the bhoga, he became very worried. Ultimately, he simply requested Gopinath with tears in his eyes, "Please eat, please eat." Gopinath became completely suffocated by Raghunandan's simple request, which was made entirely in love. And thus he stealthily ate up everything without leaving any remnants. After some time, Raghunandan's father, Mukunda, returned and asked his son if he had done what he was told. When his son replied yes, then Mukunda asked him to bring out some of the prasadam. Raghunandan replied, "Prasadam? I offered everything just like you told me, and Gopinath ate everything. So what should I, there's nothing, I can't bring you anything, there's nothing to bring." Mukunda was completely taken aback. "This boy is not naughty and he's always accustomed to speak the truth. I doubt if he could have eaten anything. I doubt if he could have eaten everything. I wonder what actually happened." Musing in this manner in this way for some time, on another day his curiosity was so stirred that he again requested Raghunandan to offer the bhoga to Gopinath on that day. On this day, however, having gone out of the house, he again came back by another way and remained hiding in one place. Raghunandan was very happy to be able to serve Sri Gopinathji again and brought everything into the deity room. As before, he again very insistently persuaded Gopinath to take his meal. As Gopinath had eaten half a laddu, he espied Mukunda peering out from his hiding spot. He didn't try to cover up the fact that he had eaten what he had, but neither did he eat any more. Seeing all this, Mukunda was completely immersed in ecstatic love and picked up his son and put him on his lap. He extolled his virtues in a voice trembling with ecstasy, all the while torrents of tears and joy falling from his eyes. Even today, those who are greatly fortunate can still see that half-eaten laddu in Gopinath's lotus hand. Thus, Sri Uddhav Das sings the glories of Raghunandan, who is not different from Mara, Cupid. Raghunandan was present at the Kethuri Utsav. In Krishna Leela, he is Kandarva Manjari, and in Dwarka Leela, he is the son of Krishna, Kandarva. Raghunandan's son is Kanai Thakur. His descendants are still residing at Sri Kanda, and Sri Kanda can be easily reached from Katwa by bus or train. And he was born in the year of 1432 Shakapta. So imagine such a great personality as Raghunandan Thakur that he can actually make the deity eat. So we shouldn't think that our deities that they don't eat because the prasadam is still left after the offering. Krishna eats. He eats a prasadam, but Krishna can eat with his eyes. He can eat any sense of his body can perform the action of any of the other senses. So Krishna can eat through his eyes. He can eat through his ears. He can eat through his feet if he wants to. So Krishna eats, and if the prasadam is or if the bhoga is offered with love, Krishna will eat, and we definitely have very loving pujaris, so there's no doubt that Krishna is eating this food which is being offered to him. But in this case, the food actually disappeared. So that's a little special. So then we have, I'll just do very quickly, Vamsidas Babaji is also very far out personality in our line. He was in the line from Narottam Das Thakur, and this is an excerpt from the book The Saints of Bengal, written by Srila Prabhupada's godbrother, Obiel Kapoor. Vamsidas Babaji was a gorgeous sadhu who lived at Swarup Ganj during the time of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's mission. He was respected by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, and he used to see to it that Vamsidas Babaji was provided with grains and so on by the Gaudiya Math Brahmacharis, whom he sent to Swarup Ganj from the Yogapith Mandir. One day, a lady selling fish approached Vamsidas, offering him some choice type of catch. Somehow or other, the Babaji's mind became attracted to tasting the fish. But he immediately checked himself and he became very angry. He first of all shouted at the woman to get away. And then he was shouting, "How could this happen? How could this happen? I have surrendered my life to Radha and Krishna. And they instill this weird desire for tasting fish in me. How is this possible? Why did you not protect me?" He was chastising Krishna. He went storming into his bhajan kutir. People gathered while he fussed and fumed at his deities inside. Then he came out praying the deities by a rope and he threw them into the Ganga. But he kept them in a rope so he could get them up again. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur told his disciple that they actually should not go and take darshan of Vamsidas Babaji because, and he said, when this news about Vamsidas Babaji throwing his deities in the river reached the Gaudiya Math Mandir, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati called his brahmacharis together and forbade them from visiting the Baba again, save for the one who would just deliver supplies. After a few days, he again called them together and said, "Some of you think I have stopped you from visiting Babaji Maharaj because he's in Maya. That is definitely not so. You are just not able to understand his Baba, so stay away, because otherwise you will misunderstand." Later, when one brahmachari visited, Bhaktisiddhanta Babaji Maharaj threw a stone at him and told, "If you want to please me, then never return here again." Previously, his reception had always been unpredictable. Sometimes the Baba would come, would welcome him, sometimes he would accept gifts without saying a word, and sometimes he would just sit and stare. Sometimes he would take the gifts and angrily throw them in the river. I have much more, but it's getting late now. So I will just repeat the song that Babaji Maharaj used to sing. "Oh Nagari, how I repent having gone to the bank of the Ganga. Gora cast a sidelong glance at me and stole my heart. Tell me, O Nagari, what Gora has done to me. He winked and whispered and did. I do not know, and he did, I do not know what to do. Saki, now I know not what to do. Life is running out of me. Oh, what has Gora done to me?" So in this way he lamented. Bhaktisiddhanta Babaji left this world in 1944. He went to his birthplace in the Majidpur district. His birth village is called Majidpur in the district of Mai Mansingha. And wherever he went, he would always carry his deities with him. And he slept very little. He just completely lived immersed in his in Krishna consciousness. So there are two types of siddha persons, perfected persons. Some of the Babajis, and they don't preach. They just stay by themselves and avoid the general mass of people and just are completely immersed in their own leela with Krishna, their own relationship with Krishna. But the other type of the preachers, like Prabhupada, who was Bhagavat, what are they called? What are these two types? Goshyanandi and Bhagavatanandi. So, Prabhupada was a Bhagavatanandi. He wanted to preach the glories and spread the glories of Krishna all over the world. And lucky for us, he did that. So, Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Raghunandan Thakur ki, Bhaktisiddhanta Babaji ki, Gaur Premanandi Hari.